Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Well, I guess we've all been there, a troubled teen. It's also the time that being a parent can be such a tough juggle. Are you being too soft, too hard? Are you pushing them away? Should you be friends with your children? Can you be? And if all that's not hard enough, what do you do when your teenagers are in trouble? Theirs is often a world saturated with sex, drugs, alcohol. Australia has an ever-increasing rate of depression and suicide among teens. Connie Ray is a licensed counsellor and has worked with families for more than 25 years now. She also knows what all this is like personally, painfully, with a son who battled drug addiction. Connie has now written a book out of that experience to guide other parents through tough times. It's called Hope for Parents of Troubled Teens. What a title. Ain't that good to know. It's a practical guide to get teenagers back on track using personal and professional advice. I know this is going to be a very helpful chat for lots of people. Connie Ray, welcome to Open House.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a privilege to be able to share with you.
Thank you, Connie. Let's put the big question out there to begin with. Why are teenagers so hard and so challenging to deal with?
I guess probably the most important reason is that they are moving from being your child to being their own individual person. And going through all of that process requires quite a bit of challenge for the teenager and for the parent, trying to find their place and their way without having too much regret, too much difficulty in getting to where they need to go. Their world is different, very different than their parents' world. Even if their parents grew up, in a world like 20 years ago, the world has changed so much for teens and parents. And I'm sure it's the same in Australia as it is here in the States.
Connie, is that process beginning earlier in a teen's life these days, do you think?
I think it is. We have such a media challenge for parents to be aware of, and teenagers today have never known a world without computers or cell phones or all of those kinds of things that most of us older parents, grandparents, when I share with my grandchildren that when I was a teenager, we had a phone that was attached to the wall with a 3-foot cord. they find that kind of hard to believe.
Yes, that's right. As I said, your book emerged, this brilliant title, Hope for Parents of Troubled Teens, from your own personal and painful experience. Take us through that.
Well, my husband and I met as freshmen in Christian high school, and so fortunately we had a lot of the same attitudes and a lot of the same thinking about how we wanted to parent, how we wanted our lives to be as a married family, and we wanted to be very involved in the church. We wanted our kids to know that Jesus was, a part of our family, and indeed one of the first words that they learned to speak was Jesus. His picture was on the wall along with grandparents and other family members, and he was considered by them to be a part of our family as much as anybody else. But we had this one child who seemed to have a penchant for doing things his own way. And he was always, I've always often said that he was apologetically defiant. he wanted to do things his own way from the time he was basically a toddler. And when he was around 8 years old, we had an incident. I don't even remember now what the incident was, but it sent me to my knees before God saying, if we can't manage this child now and he won't listen to us now, what's it going to be like later, when he's a teenager? And I went to the Word, and I don't necessarily recommend this as the best way to get an answer from God, but I opened my Bible with my eyes closed, stuck my finger on the page, and opened it up to read from the Bible, the law that I have written in your heart, the words that I put in your mouth won't depart out of your mouth or out of the mouth of your children or out of the mouth of your children's children from henceforth and forevermore. Wow. And I thought, wow.
Yes.
Later, as I read that in the New Living Bible, it said, the word that I have given you will be on your children's lips and on the lips of their children forever. And so in that one moment, I believe God gave me a promise that whatever was going to be happening in the future, and I didn't know what that was going to be, God was telling me things were going to be okay in the eventual end. But when this boy got to be a teenager, he found himself in more and more little scrapes and troubles, and eventually it ended up with taking some money from the family and hawking some items and borrowing Dad's car, taking little joyrides and trips out of town, and just a variety of things that caused us to feel like, you know, this can't be going anywhere good.
And then a drug addiction.
I think I've said before that addiction might be a little too strong, but he certainly was very involved with marijuana and alcohol, and experimented with a bunch of other things too, and decided he didn't like them. But they were pretty much a part of the whole picture of, I want to do what I want to do, and I want to find out what the world has to offer, and I'm not going to pay attention to anything that anybody has told me. And eventually we went to juvenile authorities to try to get some help, and because he was doing things that were illegal, basically offenses against the family, but we didn't know how far that might go. And so eventually what they did was put him in juvenile detention. And he was angry with us. We were fearful for what might be happening to him. And yet at the same time, we were relieved that we knew he couldn't get into any trouble for a while.
How old was he then, and, Connie?
At that time, he was 16. And then the next several years were in and out of juvenile detention. When he was 18, we celebrated his 18th birthday in a dingy little room in the juvenile detention place, and then they walked him across the street to the county jail, and because he had another month or so to serve of time. And at this time, we as parents now are saying, you know, what have we done? We were so inept as parents that we had to bring the law into it, and now he's answering to other authorities. And yet there was something also that we understood, that if he had to yield to some authority and it wasn't going to be us, he was going to have to learn at some point that there was an authority that he was going to have to yield to. And eventually we hoped that would be God.
How was he relating to you as his parents through that time?
Behaving disrespectfully, of course, because of the things that he's doing. But the other side of it was, you know, I'm sorry you don't like what I'm doing, but it's my life and I get to make my choices. And we basically were saying, yeah, it is your life, but you don't get to make your choices right now. You're living in our house, and these are the things that we expect from you, and that and we have values and standards. We have beliefs that are important to us. We were very active in our church family, in the body of the church, and we were embarrassed. We were feeling like a lot of the things that we had been teaching and working with others were just being devalued by the fact that our own child, you know, was not under our basic control.
Did you find yourself questioning whether you'd done the right thing in bringing up this boy?
One of the messages that I want to give to parents in this book is that, you know, I believe that we generally think that we're doing the best that we can in raising our children. We're doing what we have knowledge of, how we've been parented, you know, our different experiences that we've had all enter into how we parent our children. And, you know, and we, my husband and I, you know, knew that we had done some things we wish we hadn't done, and we wish we had done some things that we had neglected to do. But I think one of the things that becomes really important for parents to grasp is that our children are individuals, unique in their own right. Each of them has to make their own choice and their own decision about how they're going to relate to God. And that this child, there were many times when I said, you know, God, why did you put this child in this family? You know, we've tried to do everything right. We wanted to present a good Christian perspective to others, you know, who were raising their children, and now look at this. And God made it very clear to me at one point that this is the right child for this family. This is the right family for this child. That God doesn't make mistakes, and that what we were going through with this child would help my husband and I to grow stronger in our awareness of God. It would help our other children. We had three other children who were also watching what was going on. And we just really believed that God was going to do something for all of us, understanding that, the title of the book, Hope, hope is basically centered in God and in our relationship with Him. But that hope is also centered in Mom and Dad as we find our hope in our relationship with God and look at things that will hopefully bring that child back to where we want him to be, yes. Where God wants him to be.
Connie, how long did it take for your son to emerge from that tough place where he was?
He reached a point where things got better, then they got worse, then they got better, then they got worse again. And the last time he was given the option of either going to a treatment program or going to jail for a long time, and none of us knew what long time meant. He had kind of lost hope in himself by that time because he had tried to change some things, and the marijuana and the alcohol kept popping back into his life again. But he was given the opportunity to go to a treatment program, and he chose that, not believing that it was going to be helpful to him at all. But when he got into the program, they allowed him to call home about 2 weeks after he was into the program. It was a Christian program. It was a secular program, but with a Christian emphasis because they wanted to reach, a lot of people. And the Christian part of it was voluntary, and he had chosen to go to the Bible studies and to work with that. And he called them to tell us, Mom, Dad, I'm going to be okay. I've given my life to Christ, and I know it's going to be better, and I'm going to make it, and I'll stay here as long as it takes. And he stayed in that program for 9 months, came out a new person. He's been married now for 28 years to his high school sweetheart that he had walked with him through some of these things, and has raised two teenagers of his own. and he's been a respectful, wonderful, loving, kind son, and helped a lot of others to find their way because he's been there and he knows the pain of it.
Yes. Take us to that moment when you got that call, how that felt when you heard those words from him.
Well, it was hardly anything we could say. You know, this was just a couple of days before Christmas. And we had taken him to the program, stopped at the local music store, bought him a guitar for his Christmas present, knowing that that was something he would like. And that was our Christmas present to him, that and the program. And he didn't accept that program as much of a present at that point in time. But we believed that, that was such a godly timing for us to get that Christmas present from God and from our son. And his life just really began to blossom at that point in time. And there was no way. I knew that God was going to bring something about in this boy's life, but I didn't know how long it was going to take. And I think that that's one of the things that I want to really express in this book, too, that, that if we as parents can find the things that will help reduce any of those barriers that we might have in place between us and our child, it may take a lifetime for that child. We might not see it in our lifetime, but I don't think that it's necessarily going to take that long for us to really understand that God has given us a hope and given us things to do. At the end of each chapter, I give parents a selection of things that they can do so that they aren't feeling helpless. And a lot of those things can really work at helping them to make a better relationship with that child, even if they seem to be rejecting it all.
I want to explore some of those in detail in just a moment on Open House. We're with Connie Ray, the author of the book Hope for Parents of Troubled Teens. As we're hearing, she knows exactly what this is like as a professional counsellor, but also very personally. Connie, we've heard about your experience with your son over so many years and such a good result. What do you say were the main reasons that you got through such challenging times, would you say?
I think it came to a point for me where I finally had to stop feeling sorry for myself. I had to take the focus off of me and what people might be thinking of me as a parent, and realize that this child desperately needs something, and I don't know what it is that I can give. But I believe that God can help me give him what he needs, and partly that was helping him to know that he was loved. I think if I were looking at some of those things that really made an influence on me eventually, it was realizing the situation with our son was not hopeless, that I could reach him, that we could reach him, that we might have to change some of the ways that we interacted with him, and then asking God for wisdom so that we would know what to do and how to do it and when to do it. It's hard when your child is making bad decisions and their thinking is just seems to be out of whack. I remember sitting with him several times, talking with him, and he was always saying, "Well, you don't hear me. You aren't listening to what I'm saying." And so we would sit, and my husband and I would sit, and we would just kind of clench our teeth and bite the ends of our tongue to keep from saying anything. And then when he was all done, we would say, "Yes, we heard. We get it, but we don't agree with it." And then he would stomp off saying, "You never listen." And I think that's part of where teenagers are many times. It is they want us to agree with the things that they're thinking and that they're doing, even though we know that those things are going to take them on a wrong path. We need to work at not alienating that child,
yes.
But not enabling their behavior either. I think one of the things that I have said many times to parents is, you know, never miss an opportunity to keep your mouth shut. But the other part of that is equally important. You know, don't let your child think that their behavior is okay by your silence. So that it's important to find a balance of being able to say, you know, this doesn't work. This isn't a good choice. We won't accept that kind of behavior in the house. You can't talk like that to your mom or your dad or your siblings. Our son's conversation was not so much disrespectful in terms of using, you know, curse words or things like that. But I've talked with so many parents over the years, you know, who have allowed their children to use some pretty disrespectful language in their interactions with them. And so it's really important to look at what you as a parent really, what your standards are, what your values are, what your beliefs are, and not apologize for them to your child.
You also point out that there are different parenting styles, authoritarian, autocratic, indifferent, and democratic. How do you know which one to use in a particular circumstance if you're acknowledging wisely that all children are different?
I think in that chapter, what I'm wanting to help parents understand is that if they can identify how they deal with that child, you know, the difference between being the parent who says, you know, I want you to do this and I want you to do it yesterday, and the parent who says, you know, these are things that are important and we want you to do them, and these are the reasons why. And these are the consequences if you don't do them. It's being able to come back from any one of those parenting styles, which have been kind of identified in psychology, I guess, and looking at teenage behavior and parenting behavior, and being able to say, you know, there's a style that is a better style, and it's one that says, I want this child to learn the things that they need to learn to be able to go out and live in this world. In one of the chapters, I borrow from a child psychologist who suggests 8 tasks that are a part of what a parent needs to be doing with their child to help them find their way out in the world. And those 8 tasks are pretty definitive in terms of how our child can be able to make a successful transfer from being our child to being their own independent person, or maybe an interdependent person. But the foundational task that I put to that was that, you know, I think our most important task as a Christian parent is to help our child find that choosing of their own relationship with God in an adult kind of fashion, so that they then can use that as the foundation for all of these other tasks that are a part of what they have to learn to take care of themselves.
You also say in your book that parents should get to know their teenagers. My guess is many parents probably think that they know them already. So what do you mean by that, and how do you do it?
Well, it's teenagers don't necessarily want to be known. Yes. By the time they get to that, but they're trying to find their own identity by kind of hiding a lot of things from their parents, or maybe not hiding so much, it's just not disclosing so much of themselves. And so part of it is being there, being available, being around, paying attention to what's going on. I've talked to way too many parents over the years who have said, you know, I was so glad, you know, when my child became a teenager, because then they could take care of themselves, and I, you know, I was kind of, you know, less involved and less needy of being there, and that's just not true. They probably need us more as teenagers than they have at almost any other stage in their life, except they need us to not be nosily involved in their life, but aware, inviting their friends to our home, making sure that we understand a little bit more about the environment that they are in outside of our home. It's a scary world.
Yes.
Out there for more for parents. Kids are kind of oblivious sometimes to the things that they might be getting themselves into, but you know, as parents, we often can see, you know, some of the choices that their peers are making. We worry about the alcohol, we worry about the drugs, we worry about the sexual messages that they're getting from everywhere. Kids look at parents many times as wanting to keep them from having fun, because the messages that they're getting from the media, from the music many of them are listening to, is that drugs and alcohol are funny. I mean, there's the humor attached to a lot of the things that they see on TV, that sexual activity is normal and it's something that they should be looking to being involved in. And it's, you know, all of those things that we as parents want to spare them from any regrets about.
And there's the need to, in a way, start raising your teenagers long before they are teens, connecting with your child as a young child, so that that kind of lays the groundwork for those troubled teen years.
Mm-hmm. I worked with Parent Co-op Preschool a number of years ago with one of the community colleges, and as a parent education instructor, I did a parent program every month. One of the programs I did every year was titled, "What Kind of Teenager Do You Want to Live With?" And these were parents of 3-, 4-, 5-year-old kids. And I would bring a panel of teenagers, 5 or 6 teenagers from my church, and they would talk about being teenagers and the messages that they got from their parents, and, you know, and what was keeping them kind of from making bad choices. And the parents were able to ask them questions. But the interesting thing was that most of these parents hadn't really considered beyond their 3-, 4-, 5-year-old and how the impact of what they were doing with those children in their early years was going to impact on the kind of teenager that they would have to be living with eventually.
Can I ask you about peer groups? Does a parent necessarily have to like or accept a peer group of their teen, especially if alarm bells are ringing about that group?
I think one of the frightening things for parents is that their child will be choosing their peer group, and that the parent may or may not have as much influence in that as they would like to. But I think that if we have chosen to be aware of what's going on in our child's life, inviting their friends into our home so that we know who their friends are, know who their parents are, know some things about them. Sometimes our kids don't want to bring their friends to our home for a variety of reasons, or their friends don't want to come, but I think if we can have some kind of an impact on someone else's child, it may influence our own child in a positive way, too. And again, that starts early, because if you're waiting until they're 16 or 17 and involved with a bunch of kids who don't want to have adults around telling them anything, it's probably going to be a little bit more difficult, or maybe too late to have an influence there. But the peer group is going, this is a group of people that is going to rule our world one day.
Yes.
You know, it's not going to be too long until this group of teenagers are going to be making the choices for all the areas that we live in. And so to be able to have some kind of an influence in any way that a parent can on your child's friends, I have a little poster in my office waiting room that says, if parents don't take an active role in forming their child's life, then other forces will. And so that's kind of an important statement to parents, to realize how important it is that they be very involved in a subtle way with their teenager.
Connie, what shapes your approach to discipline? How sensitive does discipline need to be? But also there's the other extreme where you actually enlisted authorities to bring about some degree of discipline or order into your child's life.
Well, I think if we look at the word discipline, basically we're looking at the idea of teaching, discipling our children, teaching them. We tend to use the word discipline as some kind of a directional tool, I guess, in helping our children to know what is right and what is wrong. But I think the important thing is, at any stage, of course, early on, we're doing things a little bit differently in helping to form our children's behavior a little bit, or at least let them know it's acceptable. But as time goes on, it's basically really important for our children to understand that there are consequences for choices that they make. And so if we have a set of family standards and values that are important, and our child may be wandering from those, to know that they have a consequence that will come down upon them. And sometimes it's a natural consequence, but that natural consequence can be the parent saying, this is what's going to happen. I talked to a grandmother a while back ago who's raising her grandchild, and the grandchild is 10, I believe, and she had done something that was outside of the grandmother's discipline rules, and she had grounded her for 30 days, and so 30 days of grounding for a kid can help them to understand a little bit of the consequence of what might be happening, but also it needs to be maybe short enough for a younger child to 30 days is like a lifetime for a 10-year-old.
Yes.
For a 16-year-old or 15-year-old or 16-year-old, the worst thing that could happen is you take away their cell phone for a day.
Yes, indeed.
It becomes really important for parents to understand, what are the most painful things to their child, and to be able to say, if this happens or if this doesn't happen, then this is what's going to be happening, so that they understand early on what the consequences will be. They're not just surprised.
Yes.
When they've done something that I often ask parents, what are the bottom line rules, and do your kids know those things, and what happens, do they know what will happen if they break those rules or if they don't pay attention to them?
Yes. Connie, can I ask about the parents of teens and how important it is for you to work with your partner in this process, because this can also put a tremendous strain on marriages this time.
I have a chapter on marriage. I title it, "A Mom and Dad Are Also Husband and Wife." And so at this point, when there's a lot of stuff going on that is disrupting the family, it becomes sometimes a blame game. Mom thinks Dad didn't do enough, or Dad thinks Mom's too harsh, or vice versa. And it can become a really important part of the marriage relationship to be able to communicate with each other about the things that are important mutually, and being able to make a firm stand, together, so that the kids know that Mom and Dad love each other first, and because they love each other first, they love those kids with all their hearts and are going to make sure that they have the right kind of discipline, the right kind of training, the right kind of structure that will help them to grow into strong people.
Yes.
And that's what we want. We want our children to grow up into strong individuals who can meet the world and contribute to it and find a relationship with God that really gives them a foundation for life.
Yes. Can I wrap up our conversation by asking you two similar questions? If there was one thing that you could say to teens and one thing that you could say to parents about this time and about this process, what would you say first to the teens?
This is a hard one because, our son wrote a couple paragraphs in one of the chapters at the end of the book, and pretty much what he said was, when he was in that frame of mind, there wasn't anything anybody could say to him that would have changed his direction. He didn't want to hear it. He wasn't open to it. But if I were, and I do say this to teens in my office all the time, your parents love you. They may not have done everything right. They may not have done everything exactly the way you wanted them to do it, but they love you and they care about you. And I've heard kids say, my parents don't trust me. And my response to them is, and this might be what I would like to say to every teen, you know, it's not a question of whether your parents trust you. It's whether you can trust your parent. You need to trust your parents to have love for you and caring for you that goes beyond anything that you can imagine. So trust them, even though they may make some mistakes. That trust them to want the best for you and listen to them.
And what would you say to parents? One thing to parents about this process?
Never give up. Yes. It's never too late to connect with your child in a positive way. You know, they may vehemently reject attempts to show caring and love, but do it anyway. You know, just keep on keeping on. And that may mean sometimes making some hard choices, like, you know, you can't live here anymore. You know, we don't see things the same way. We have disagreeable times all the time because we just can't seem to figure out how to make it work. And so at a point, and that's not at 15 or 16, it might not even be at 20, because, you know, sometimes there are other issues that are part of that. Maybe this child has got some mental or emotional problems that need to be addressed by a professional. Maybe there are some physical things going on. And so I think a parent has to do everything that they possibly can to rule out areas that a child simply doesn't have the capability of dealing with some things. And but most of all, being able to make sure that that child knows that you have not rejected them, that you love them, you care about them, and maybe it's a time to apologize to them for some things that you know were made difficulties for them. A lot of kids are growing up in families where there's a second or a third or a fourth marriage or people living together, and so a parent sometimes feels so at fault maybe for things. But you know, you can always go to your child and say, "I'm sorry for this. I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry that you know that some of the things that maybe I have done or not done have impacted on you. But I want to make that right. So from now on, this is the way it's going to be." And sometimes that means laying the law down a little bit harder.
Yeah.
And sometimes it means backing off a little.
And never give up, as you say. Connie Ray, I'm sure this has been a tremendously helpful conversation for many people tonight. Connie is the author of the book Hope for Parents of Troubled Teens, and we'll put the details up on our Open House community Facebook page. Connie, thanks so much for joining us on Open House.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I've enjoyed it.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.